Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today we're heading to Broadway with theatre critic for the International New York Times, Matt Wolfe. We'll begin with Shakespearean musical Something Rotten, with exclamation mark, to see if it lives up to its rave reviews. We'll get a new set of commandments from the old man upstairs in An Act of God, and then we'll learn a few lessons in theatre etiquette from a recent performance by Patti LuPone in Show for Days. That and more all to come here on the Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Matt. Great to have you back with us. Sure. Fresh off the plane from New York, I gather. Good trip for
you. I'm still panting. Yeah, it was very good. Virgin upgraded me, so that was nice.
Oh, and you get a little plug in there as well.
Exactly.
The first of many, surely, it'll be. Let's begin our cycle through the world of theatre with Something Rotten, a Shakespeare-themed comedy musical, which, if a number of reviews are to be believed, is more appealing than perhaps my description suggests it might be. What's the story? Just what exactly is this, I guess, first of all?
Well, for one thing, it's a real oddity in that it's a brand new original musical that didn't have an out-of-town tryout. And as has been the case for a long time, most Broadway shows, particularly musicals, are pre-tested somewhere else, very often London. So it's quite rare for a show on Broadway to open cold because there's a lot of money at stake and a lot of reputations. But Something Rotten took the plunge and opened cold. They were going to have an out-of-town tryout and they canceled it because they were so confident. And I think their confidence was well-deserved. It's a genuinely funny show, and I say that as if more shows should be that, but they really aren't. And there are relatively few shows that have the prescribed desire to entertain and actually do. It's the story set during the Renaissance. The first song is called Welcome to the Renaissance, so we know where we are in time. And it's these two scribes, the two Bottom brothers, who are trying to write a hit play. But the problem is there's a rock god dramatist in their midst who goes by the name of William Shakespeare. And he has Christian Borle, who plays the part, who won a Tony Award for his performance. He's wonderful. He gets a sort of great rock number in the second act called It's Hard to Be the Bard. And it's basically about, you know, what it's like to compete in the landscape against capital W Will.
And tell me, I'm intrigued by the fact, obviously, you mentioned that Tony Award, it's been nominated for a host, it was actually very highly regarded. What's the perfect chemistry then that leads them not to do the out-of-town tryout, that gives people that kind of confidence? Is it about the casting? Is it about somebody reads a script and just says exactly as you said, this is just funny? I mean, what's that? What's the sort of, what's the word, the sort of alchemy that's there?
I was going to say alchemy. Well, it's ever elusive. If it were less elusive, then theater would be a science and everything would be a hit. But largely, Tom, it has to do with the fact that, and it's driven by the producers, it's a producer's decision. At some point, maybe at a rehearsal or probably an early reading, some guy or gal with their finger on the financial pulse said, actually, why spend another $1 million or more to try it out in Seattle or Chicago or LA or London? Let's just defray those costs, open it cold on Broadway, because the response has been good. What that alchemy is endlessly mysterious, but whatever it is, it triggers a comic appeal and gets to the funny bone. I think there are prototypes for this kind of show. I mean, the Book of Mormon, sort of, although this is much, much less irreverent and in your face, but kind of cheeky, larky. You don't have to do any homework going in. If you're scared of Shakespeare, it doesn't matter. You'll still have a good time. On the other hand, one of the fun things about it is that if you know Shakespeare, actually, the show's pretty clever. There are characters in it who are called Portia and who are called Shylock. But what is done with those characters is actually very clever if you know the plays from which they originate.
So it's the old works on two levels, or two or three levels, perhaps even, which sounds rather appealing. What about where this could go then? Because it's interesting, you know, that, as you said, there have been those comparisons to Book of Mormon, which obviously became like beyond a smash hit. Is this the kind of thing that we're going to see, I don't know, around the world? Could you see this go onto the screen? I mean, is it that kind of potential success?
Good question.
Or is it a bit more of a curate's egg than that, perhaps?
It might be a bit more of a curate's egg only. I mean, it's interesting vis-a-vis its putative appeal in London, because obviously, I mean, clearly it It has lots of connections to the UK, but it feels like, although some, not all of the creative team are in fact British, it still feels like a very American-centered piece. For instance, one of the central confusions in the plot hangs on the fact that the word Hamlet is misunderstood as omelet, so all of a sudden everyone is putting on this kind of musical extravaganza on the theme of eggs, and that's quite fun. But I don't want to give too much away, but the climax depends upon the fact that Shakespeare becomes sort of the province of the British, but that other thing known as musical theatre gets shipped off to the States. So if you were then to do that in the UK, where the message of the show is that that is really best done in the US, I'm not sure how that works.
What you're saying.
See
yes,
what I mean?
It's complicated.
Whereas in the UK, you might think, but let's scrap the musical bit. Let's just do the Shakespeare. Let's have the omelette. I mean, Hamlet.
That is something rotten. Rotten Eggs, maybe, which is on at the St. James's Theatre yes. in New York. Let's move on. And I guess, yeah, the more sort of irreverence of sorts. An Act of God, which stars Jim Parsons, who many people will recognise from the American sitcom The Big Bang Theory. The play is an adaptation of a book by David Javerbaum based on a series of tweets, his Twitter alter ego Tweet of God, which delivers a brand new set of commandments and demystifies a few of the troubling questions that have been vexing mankind down the years. We mentioned Book of Mormon, of course, a moment ago, Matt. Where does this sit in that sort of satirical pantheon?
My guess is, this is just a surmise, I don't think this show would have got to Broadway without the prior success of Book of Mormon, because the fact that Book of Mormon, which is really pretty belligerently kind of off the charts in ways that we can't even say on air, the fact that that not only got to Broadway, but has been a big hit on Broadway and also everywhere else, including London, I think has made producers decide, there's really nothing that's off the table, potentially, just depending on how well it's done and if there's an audience for it. And of course, this has, I suppose, from a producer's point of view, an advantage Book of Mormon doesn't, which is a recognizable star, Jim Parsons. The thing about it is, you know, what's funny in a very concise, pithy tweet, and tweets by definition are easily digestible and bite-sized, if you kind of pull them like taffy across 90 minutes, a little bit of the pleasure goes out of it. Mm. And I couldn't help but feel that this is sort of a breezy nightclub routine that, first of all, isn't really a play. And also, it's been sort of pushed to breaking point by having to set it in a Broadway context. What pretty much saves the day, it isn't a one-man show, though it kind of feels like a one-man show, but there are, in fact, two other men in it. But it's essentially Jim Parsons' evening. And he is immediately likable. Everyone goes bananas the minute he comes on stage because they can't believe this guy from telly is in front of them. I think when I was in the audience, I was probably one of two or three New Yorkers in the house. And Jim Parsons' affection for the theater, it should be said, by the way, is very real. I mean, you know, for a youngish actor who doesn't have to have done any theater, he's done three Broadway shows in the last 10 years, which is pretty good. You know, certainly doesn't pay as well as a hit sitcom. On the other hand, a hit sitcom funds this. So he's very likable. He's very engaging. And it's kind of like spending time with a genial raconteur at a party who's telling you some really good gags. But at a party, after about half an hour, you can kind of move on to the next one or get another drink. Here, you can't really do either. There is one joke in it, and I'm certainly not going to say it on air, but actually, it puts everything in the Book of Mormon in the shade. It's just one joke, and I knew about it going in, but I was nonetheless shocked when I heard it. And I did think, how in heaven's name did they get away with that? But it is pretty clever and it is pretty out there. So if anyone's listening to this, I will be very, well, they will know what the joke is the minute they hear it. And it's interesting to hear, you know, 1,100 people sort of gasping at once.
Exactly. Well, that's always a good moment. And it's funny, we were talking about the sort of the alchemy, the mystery of putting a hit together. And it's interesting, of course, you've not only got Jim Parsons, as you say, sort of bankable star, you've got the writing, again, with this show, this is a multiple Emmy winner. We talk about David Javan, who's written for The Daily Show.
Yeah.
So the gags, the wit, the quick sort of comedy, it's not going to be in short supply, one imagines.
Well, exactly, and I think the fact that David Javan, who's extremely clever, I'm not denying that for a second, but I think the fact that most of his plaudits have been in the realm of TV and Emmys, you kind of feel as if this is Jim Parsons' live audition, maybe to front a late night chat show. As in when James Corden, Englishman James Corden, decides to hang up his cleats or whatever. And actually, Jim Parsons would do a very engaging job, because if he can take this material and spin it into something approaching comic gold, although it doesn't quite get to the capital G, he's doing pretty well.
Fairly well. That's An Act of God, which is on until the 22nd of August at Studio 54. Let's talk next, Matt, about Show for Days at the Newhouse Theatre, starring Patti LuPone and Michael Urie. This tells the story of a struggling theatre company with big dreams. Now, we often talk, when we're talking about books, about writers, or movies about movie makers, this sort of thing. If you do theatre about theatre, it can succeed, but it can also kind of crash and burn. How do you think this has been playing so far?
Well, this is off-Broadway, but as part of the Lincoln Center Theater Complex. And the Mitzi Newhouse is a wonderful theater. It's kind of a miniature thrust stage, and it's very intimate, perhaps a little too intimate for reasons I'll get to in a minute. The writer, Douglas Carter Bean, who's a bit of a New York theater regular, and he has had a play on the West End called The Little Dog Laughed, he is here casting a glance back to his own theatrical apprenticeship growing up as a young gay man in Reading, Pennsylvania in the 1970s. Coming of age sexually, culturally, possibly even politically, in this sort of small town theater community. And the Michael Urie character, and Michael Urie is indecently charming in the part. He's even more charming than Jim Parsons, so he can have the late night talk show. But he plays sort of the Douglas Carter Bean alter ego, who is now in middle age, although the most youthful middle age you've ever seen, looking back on his precocious, sexually adventurous teenage self. And Patti LuPone, who is, of course, a vaunted Broadway diva in real life, plays the small town diva of this minor league theater troupe, but a woman who is major league, of course, to herself. And it's a sort of variation, I suppose, on Patti LuPone's major Broadway performance a couple of years ago in Gypsy, one of the great musicals of all time, for which she won the second of her two Tony Awards. The first was for Evita. I don't think this play pushes her particularly, but it's fun to see her in a play, not a musical. It's probably more relaxing for her because she doesn't have to give her voice a workout 8 times a week. And there was a very interesting incident that happened at the performance I attended, which sort of eclipsed the play. And it's interesting when something that happens during the play becomes bigger than the play. And what it was that it was a Wednesday evening performance. That matinee, which I wasn't at, I was at the evening, but the matinee apparently had been very bad from the audience point of view. Endless cell phones, talking, unwrapping of suites, all of this. So the cast, I'm told, was pretty on edge at the evening show. So the evening show is proceeding. Pretty quiet audience, actually. But apparently, Miss LuPone, because you can see the audience entirely from the stage, noticed a woman sort of over to her right, her peripheral vision, texting throughout pretty much the whole thing.
Oh, and there's a bit, see where this might be going.
There's a bit in the second act where her character, Irene, as she's exiting, just shakes, because a little bit of breaking the fourth wall. So she shakes somebody's hand in the audience very quick, and then out she goes. This particular performance, Patti LuPone had spotted this woman. So as she was shaking this woman's hand with one hand, with the other hand, she took her cell phone and actually exited with it. And so there was the woman minus cell phone. And it was pretty extraordinary because, it's not every day that the leading lady in a Broadway or London show actually absconds with one of your possessions.
Do we know what became of the phone and said,
should we know exactly what became of the phone? She, Miss LuPone, not the offending texter, gave it to the stage manager immediately. I mean, she wasn't going to take it home because that would be theft. Gave it to the house manager, and the house manager found the woman, who's probably borderline hysterical, at the end of the show and gave it back. the next night, and there are clips of this on YouTube, before the show started, Patti LuPone, in her street clothes, came on stage to cheers from the audience. Because by this point, you can't keep any secrets in the social media age. By this point, it had gone viral, and she was like the heroine of Broadway and, you know, flying a flag for good theatrical etiquette in the face of these brazen hussies. So she came on and basically said, you know, we are hired to entertain and to tell a story. And if the audience won't allow us to, why are we all here? So the place went nuts. This followed a previous incident at another New York show called Hand to God, no relation to Act of God, where some dolt in the audience, there was an electrical socket on stage and he wanted to recharge his cell phone. So he actually went up on the stage and plugged in his cell phone. And someone had to point out to him that that was part of the set. That's not like available to the audience to do what they want. And that guy, I mean, you couldn't make any of this up. That guy has since hired a publicist and has told his story, whether for money or not, I don't know. So I wouldn't be surprised if we then find the play about the guy who misbehaves at the play.
It's extraordinary stuff. I wonder what Patti LuPone would have made of that guy. It doesn't bear thinking about. That is Shows for Days, which is currently at the Newhouse Theatre. Matt, just before we finish, let me ask you briefly about Heisenberg, and another play that ostensibly has nothing to do with the celebrated physicist, I understand, which has sort of confused some people.
I lowered the median age of this show by about 50 years. I've never felt younger in my life, Tom. And as I was coming out, all these very sweet Manhattan octogenarians were saying, do you understand what the title means? So I was... I'm the least scientific person in the world, but I was trying to remember something about the uncertainty principle, which I think was good enough for them. And it makes sense within the context of the play. It's very fine. It's by the English writer Simon Stevens, better known for writing The Curiousness of the Dog in the Nighttime, from which it could not be more different. It's a two-hander about a 40-something American played beautifully by Mary Louise Parker, who's living in London. And she strikes up a relationship of various sorts with a much older Irish butcher played by a lovely actor named Dennis Arndt. The talk is, only talk, that Ian McKellen is going to play that role in a separate London production at some point. We'll see. But it's done with minimal scenery, stage stripped bare, just about the acting in the interplay between two fine actors. Off-Broadway, seats about 100, and it's very good.
But one to watch, as it could potentially, as you say, be coming transatlantic.
Oh, I think so.
Watch
and also, it's very actable. People are going to be, you know, chasing one another to do it.
So keep an eye on Heisenberg too. Matt, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks very much for being with us, as always. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks too to our producer, Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Writer Mark Mason will be talking non-fiction for us. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Thanks very much for listening.